It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And we are off and running for the 18th day of March, 2019, 2 days to spring. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you find us each and every Monday through Friday, and Saturdays and Sundays for that matter, for the rerun stream. But there's always something playing on the stream at HeadOn.live, and you're welcome to check it out just anytime you want to. But if you want the live program, you want to be here between 6 and 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And that, of course, is 3 to 6 Pacific Daylight Time and several other times, you know, depending on where you are on this sweet little blue-green marble, this little time machine hurtling in helical fashion through the universe. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It's Moran Monday. We've got lots of Morans to get at, but we got business that we have to take care of on at the top of any given program. And that involves a whole bunch of thank yous. Yes, indeed. Thank you very kindly to all of our subscribers, whom I will list momentarily. But I also have special thanks to send out because the equipment fundraiser is complete. I didn't think it could be done, but it was done through the determination of several people. Charlene in Rogues Island, a member of the sorority of Lean, and... Sister Jude out in the Great Northwest, and Paul. Big thanks to Paul. Thank you. And special super double plus good thanks to Kat, and thanks to Ralps, and thanks to Chris in Germany. And if I missed anybody, please remind me, because I'm just doing that off the, from what passes for my mind. There are others, and thank you very kindly, and I'll try to get everything sorted out so that everyone gets appropriately thanked. The gizmo is on the way, and I am agonizing over which of about two or three laptops to go with. You want processing power plus RAM, plus plenty of expansion ports for gizmos and whatnot, and just make sure that it can handle everything that's going to be thrown at it in the course of being used on a remote. I won't mention brands simply because it will create an avalanche of emails. Bob, that's trash! And then there will be the inevitable, why don't you get an Apple, Bob? Well, because I don't have $2,700. That's not within the budget. Why don't you get a MacBook? No. So it looks like we'll be going with a Windows 10 based machine. But it'll be a good machine. And we should be up and running nicely for as many nights as I'm able to broadcast while I'm away in D.C. So that. Plus, we have thanks for a weekend worth of subscriptions that have come through. We'll work our way backwards. Thank you very kindly to Grace. Thank you, Grace. Thank you very much for being a partial sponsor of the program. Thank you to Stephen for being a partial sponsor of the program. Thanks again to Charlene in Rogues Island for being a partial sponsor of the program. Thank you to Peter. Thank you very kindly indeed, Peter. Thank you very much to Arthur for being a partial sponsor of the program, and to our buddy Gary Laborman. Thank you to Samuel, and thank you to Nancy. These are all people who subscribe over the course of, let's see, today, yesterday, and Saturday. And thanks as well to our pal Joy. I think I mentioned that on Friday. But thank you one and all for your kind subscriptions and for the equipment fund. And that leaves us, and this is some programming notes here at the beginning of the program, just going forward. The fundraising goal, because we pulled up $330 short, is 510 this evening to come up even with keeping the program on the air, paying all the damn bills, and et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot of et cetera bills, believe you me. Long day today. Agnes had a doctor's appointment across the river, so we did that. And then managed to get back here in time for the program. But she's got another appointment this Thursday, and this actually impacts the program. Her appointment is Thursday morning, and if it gives you any idea of what it's like trying to doctor in here in almost level West by Cold Trump Genistan, there's an actual medical school in Charleston. And there's doctors in Charleston, there's doctors in Huntington, there's doctors in Beckley. But Agnes was diagnosed a few months back. I think I even mentioned this. She was diagnosed with lupus. And I just checked in for purposes of HIPAA. I yelled to Agnes through the common wall between the studio and the bedroom, and she does not mind me mentioning this. I am talking to our family, that's right. Horn Family Community Congregation. See, that's how it is. That's how she feels. That's how I feel. That's how y'all feel. But anyway, it literally took months to find a rheumatologist, not a doctor. We're not even going to a doctor on Thursday. We're going to a not a doctor. Because apparently that's what you get. So the appointment is early on Thursday, which would mean having to get up stupid, crazy early on Wednesday, and would probably mean getting back that I wouldn't be fit to do a program, just be completely just wrung out. So the upshot to all of that is that there is no program on Wednesday evening. Wednesday afternoon, we'll get in the car, we'll go up to Morgantown, we will stay the night in some no-tell motel, and get up and go to the doctor on Thursday morning, and then hightail it back here in order to be on the air Thursday evening. So, just make a note of it, no prayer meeting Wednesday. I'd like to tell you that the deacons are disgusted, but they aren't. Because they're our deacons, and they know that at this point in time, they would be probably passing those big old heavy brass-bound burgundy velvet-lined plates pretty much all evening long. So that's where the schedule stands. Now, the other thing I need to tell you a little bit about. Now, let me tell you, Buster, get off my lawn. You're yelling at clouds. Is that I can tell you a little bit more about the trip to D.C. I will be leaving here on Sunday the 31st, and I will be in D.C. working on AIC Act stuff through, I'll be coming home on the 10th, and I hope I will be back here in the studio in time to get behind the mic and do a program on the 10th. But that means April the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and April the 8, 9, 10. No program except for what I can do while I'm up there via the new gizmos. Well, gizmo and the new laptop. And I will try to do something at least two or three nights of the first week. And again, something on, well, and that's, this is why it's such a big deal. I'm not using New Year's Eve birthday party noisemakers, but I pretty well could be. Because, see, one, the AIC Act, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, is going to be reintroduced in the House. And it's going to be reintroduced in that first week of April. But that's not all. I mean, if that was all, that would be plenty. Because, one, the AIC Act remains the only, in the long and tormented history of the abuse of the people of Appalachia by coal companies in the form of massive industrial scale, tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands of acres wide, wholesale destruction of Appalachia, the AIC Act is the only bill that's ever been presented to the Congress that would end it. Lots and lots and lots of organizations with lots and lots and lots and lots of big ideas and even lots and lots and lots and lots of money. Well, we used to talk to them because they'd come here to Appalachia and because they were experts. And we'd say, hey, we just have to end it. We've got to make an effort to make them stop. And they'd say things like, well, you know, we certainly have expertise in this, and we're terribly, terribly smart. And you hillbillies just don't really know what you're talking about. And so this isn't a good time to ask someone to stop killing hillbillies. Well, there may be a time someday, but it's not. And so we listened to that for literally years. Until, in 2012, we quit listening to the big greens telling us no. And we decided to go to Washington, D.C. and do it our own damn selves. And we did. And we did. It's been introduced, the AIC Act has, in every Congress since June 19th of 2012. But it has never been introduced in a Congress that was actually not hostile to it. That all changes in the first week of April. Because it will be introduced to a Congress that has a significant number of members who say that they're actually worried about climate change. A Congress whose majority says that it is concerned with carbon pollution. And some of whom are even actually sympathetic to the idea that maybe all of Appalachia isn't some monolithic cult of Trump, and that there are actually liberal, democratic, progressive hillbillies who want to see mountaintop removal and the poisoning and the death and the sickness and the misery that attends it ended. And so we're going to be walking the soles off our shoes come the first week of April. Because in the second week of April, something even bigger is going to happen. Something even more historic is going to happen. Because in the second week of April, unless something changes the scheduling. In the second week of April, there's actually going to be a hearing gaveled in under a Democratic majority in the House of Representatives, in which there will be no shying away from the toxic health effects of mountaintop removal on the people who live in central Appalachia where it is practiced. There will be sworn testimony given as to what the impacts are. There will be sworn testimony given as to the death, as to the disease, the birth defects, the misery that this godforsaken practice causes in this region that actually has, and I know there are a lot of people out there who don't think we are, but, you know, real live, honest-to-God Americans in it. And there's even a possibility that the Yake Act will be passed out of committee. God, I hope so. God, I hope so. If you've been listening to this program for a number of years, you know how much time has gone into working on this issue of environmental justice and human dignity in Appalachia. And you've been very patient with me when I had to be away. And for that, I'm grateful. And it's not very often that you can tune into a radio program and be part of a community that is actually making history. Because this is nothing short of that. This is big. So that's the work to be done in the first week and a half of April. That's what the equipment fundraiser was about, so that I can keep in touch and keep the program going to the extent humanly possible while I'm gone. Because, you know, we'll be getting up in the morning at, you know, Sparrow's fart and hitting the road, going into D.C., and we will spend the entirety of the day in D.C. taking meetings and knocking on doors. And then we'll come back to our little Airbnb, and I'll have everything set up. We'll fire it up and carry on some conversation. Maybe we'll have more news. It certainly would be awesome if that was the case. But I'm sort of stunned. I'm thrilled. And it feels like a monumental step forward. And for those members of the House of Representatives who are making this happen, when we get to the point, not if, but when we get to the point, when we end this, there should be statues. Statues of the bill's sponsor, John Yarmuth of Kentucky. Statues of the chair of the Natural Resources Committee in the House, Raul Grijalva. And of people who are gone but not forgotten, like Louise Slaughter of New York, a daughter of the coal fields of eastern Kentucky, who, though she left there, never, ever had the people and the region leave her heart. So that's why I've been so antsy about everything that's going on. Because this is a chance, a puncher's chance, for history to be made and for justice to be served. So that's what's coming up. But again, we got 2 weeks of broadcasting. Well, a week and 4 days. Wednesday, like I said. to talk before then. So that's in the way of programming notes, but also in the, I mean, it's news. You might not, you know, just because it doesn't necessarily show up on some portion of the multimillionaire for-profit media doesn't mean it isn't news. In fact, the public health disaster in Appalachia is probably one of the single greatest under, and in some cases, unreported stories in the United States of America. Okay. Now, it is Moran Monday, and we do have Morans. I've got one in particular to focus on. God, I'm sniffing like I've been doing Adderall. I promise you I haven't. No. God, what a moranic weekend. Oh, just a little historical note. Since we weren't on air for St. Paddy's Day, I hope you all had a happy St. Patrick's Day. We did the usual, you know, the corned beef. Didn't do it outside, though. It's just a little too crummy yet. And I didn't have the time or the wherewithal to do my style of hickory smoked brisket. But regardless, we had some corned beef. No, not out of a can, out of the crock pot. But I added an element to our St. Patrick's Day observation. You know, St. Patrick's Day is all about the wearing o' the green. And so, you know, they turned the Chicago River green. Places, even here in almost level west by Cold Trump, Jinyistan, were serving no small amount of green beer. I made sure and wore my green on both Saturday and Sunday so as to avoid being pinched. But I added one green element to our observation of St. Patrick's Day. And that was an avocado, or avocados. Why? Well, avocados, of course, are native to Mexico. And back when James Knox Polk initiated a war of choice against the innocent people of Mexico between 1846 and 1848. It was the dirtiest, most illegal war that we had ever started up until George W. Bush attacked the innocent people of Iraq. But in that war, the United States, and you know, it's one of those things that in terms of history we don't know a lot about, or maybe we've chosen to forget it because it's so godforsaken shameful. But we invaded Mexico. I mean, we didn't just skirmish along the border. We invaded Mexico, which, of course, at that point in time, included New Mexico, Texas, portions of Texas, Arizona, chunk of California. And it was a dirty and shameful thing. The Marine hymn to this day contains a reference, you know, from the halls of Montezuma. Well, Moctezuma, who was the last revered speaker of the Mexica people during the time of the Spanish invasion, it had no halls by then. But among other things, future traitors to the United States like Robert E. Lee and Jefferson Davis participated in that dirty war that included an assault on a place called Chapultepec, in which little Mexican boys had no choice but to face off against the invading Americans. And somewhere along the way, and this is why I stopped to remember on St. Patrick's Day, somewhere along the way, a group of Irish immigrants to the United States who had joined the U.S. military realized that what they were doing was unquestionably, undeniably, not just wrong, but wicked. And so, led by a fellow named John Riley, somewhere between 175 and several hundred immigrants, many of whom had been part of the U.S. military, deserted and formed up a unit inside the Mexican army to fight the invading belligerents. Depending on how you look at things, they either deserted or they defected. But deserters don't often wind up volunteering to fight for the other side, so it's probably more like defection. It wasn't just Irishmen, though. There were Germans, Canadians, English. There were some French, some Italians, some Poles, some Scots, some Spaniards, even some Swiss. And the San Patricio Brigade even included escaped African-American slaves from the brutal American South. And so on St. Patrick's Day, the San Patricio Brigade is honored both in Mexico and in Ireland. The ones the United States Army managed to catch, they killed. There's a plaque in Mexico City with all the names on it in memory of the Irish soldiers of the heroic St. Patrick's Battalion, martyrs who gave their lives to the Mexican cause in the United States' unjust invasion of 1847. So, I brought some avocados home. And because I don't take any convincing to eat avocados. I love them. I loved avocados before avocados were cool. I loved avocados before hipsters were putting it on toast. But I took a moment just to remember those heroes. Sometimes you get in a fight even if you don't have a fighting chance. And so I remembered them with honor on St. Patrick's Day. And I will try to always so do. Because the Mexican War was a filthy stain on this country's history. So that. Now, again, lots of morons, gonna get to them. But there's one more thing that I just, by way of pondering where we are and how we get out of this handbasket on the bicycle on the road that's so broad and wide and straight and getting warmer and warmer and warmer. It's hard not to do the Moran part, you know, where Julius Caesar spent the entire weekend rage tweeting at all of the perceived slights that swirl around him. And this is certainly by no means any sort of praise, but George Conway, who is the husband of Kellyanne Conway, the Blue Hen tells me on Twitter, we need to get you down here to Chicano Park. I think I would like it. Lots of places I still need to see. But George Conway, the husband of Kellyanne Conway, the supposed counselor to Julius Geiser, George Conway has developed a bit of a habit of not holding back in terms of his criticisms of the aforementioned Mar-a-Lago Mussolini. And so in a an extremely terse single sentence tweet after a day of rage tweeting, well, George Conway noted, much to the consternation, I imagine, of Julius Geiser, he typed a single line, single sentence tweet. His condition, and this was yesterday, going on toward noon. The chlamydia Claudius wasn't even near done. But George Conway tweeted, his condition is getting worse. Certainly the understatement of the day. But it's fairly clear from a statement like that that George Conway is convinced that there is something badly, physically, mentally wrong with Tangerine Tiberius. Because you don't use the word condition if it's just, you know, oh, well, he's prone to tantrums. If you parse the language, it appears that George Conway feels quite confident that there is some sort of pathology at work within the thin gray settlings that slosh around and pass for brains in Geiser Disgustus. And there are any number of theories as to what that pathology is. I have espoused the spirochete theory. You know, the idea that back in his sexual Vietnam of the 90s, he managed to have some unprotected sex and picked himself up a dose of syphilis that went untreated, and we are now watching him actively decay into tertiary neurosyphilis. It's as good a theory as any until we have some sort of actual diagnostic work, and that's the purpose of at least this little, what is this, an editorial comment? Hell, the whole program's editorial comment. But the question is what you do about it. And this, you know, one of the things, and I'm proud of this, we have engaged more time here on this program examining the constitutional methods of presidential removal and remedy, whether it be the 25th Amendment or whether it be impeachment or whether it be the question of whether the president can be charged with a crime of which he is presently implicated in no less than four. But one aspect presented itself to me earlier today, this morning even, and it happened as a result of somebody I heard talk about the fact, 25th Amendment, sure, but then you got to get the cabinet on board. And no, not necessarily. Because there's some there's some modifying language in Section 4. Now we should note that Precious Lindsey Graham, down there underneath the fainting couch at the ancestral home of Smoldering Chode, Lindsey Graham has said that he wants a complete record of anybody who had a conversation about the 25th Amendment and that dear man, Donald J. Trump. Well, Lindsey, you're welcome to come on this program, and I'll be happy to explain it to you real slow in little bitty words that even you can understand, that even your God Emperor could understand. But he sent a letter, he did, insisting that Attorney General William P. Barr, by the way, who was the architect of all those pardons that George H.W. Bush gave to keep his own ass out of a sling with Iran-Contra. You might say he's a past master at cover-up, William Barr. Then a few days ago, not just the letter, but on Thursday last, he called for the Justice Department to appoint another special counsel to look into the FBI. Oh, goodness sakes, I think I'm having palpitations and vapors at the same time. Somebody get me a stiff brace and shot of bourbon, would you? He wants a second special counsel to look into the FBI and the Justice Department conduct and whether they was affected by political bias or... Well, you might not want to start asking those questions, Lindsey, because it might turn out that they were not affected by political bias, that they were in fact affected by their oaths to the Constitution of the United States of America. But nonetheless, you know, Lindsey's got the vapors. But for all of him being such a highfalutin lawyer, Lindsey apparently has not read the 25th Amendment with half or a third or perhaps even a tenth of the attention to detail that Weans have here. Why, yes, I think that's a lovely idea. Brother Deacon Asa says, may I propose to the Horn Family Community Congregation that we add Maggot Monarch to the lineup of the various and sundry designations we use to describe the walking Nigerian email scam in the White House? Yeah, no kidding. Maggot Monarch. Oh, that sounds like something out of a nightmare from a Pink Floyd album. Good morning, Worm, Your Honor. Mm-hmm. But down in Section 4, which is the part of Section 4, we have proven in this little community of ours to be better at picking apart theories by which the 25th Amendment or some other constitutional measure could be used to relieve us of this walking criminal enterprise of a president than any number of the multimillionaire for-profit media programs out there that pride themselves on such profound analysis. No one, for instance, to sort of go over some old ground. No one has discussed, I think, except us, the impact of a potential mental hygiene examination upon the President of the United States were one to be ordered by a jurisdiction in which he sits. Just little old us. And so now, this. And we're back into the weedy portions of Section 4 of the 25th Amendment. And it starts off with all that business about what the vice president and the majority of either the principals, and it says, whenever the vice president and a majority of either of the principal officers of the executive departments, which is taken generally to mean cabinet, and then you go through all the business with the letter transmitted, the president's nuts, and then the vice president becomes acting president, and then the president sends back a letter that says, I'm definitely not nuts, I'm fucking addicted to Adderall, okay? And then he gets to be, and then it gets thrown into the Jesus Christ. It's a mess. But there's a way out. And it's right there in the first sentence. It's been there all along. But people just read that first clause, whenever the president and a majority of the principal officers of the executive departments, and they go, ah, that ain't going to happen. Yeah, because Betsy DeVos is going to sign a letter saying that she thinks that the president is nuts just when she's got the opportunity in hand to do so much of the mischief that she has so long yearned to do in the way of taking apart the American system of public education. And I understand that. But there's a dependent clause in that first whole clause of Section 4, the first sentence. Whenever the vice president and a majority of either the principal officers of the executive departments or of such other body as Congress may by law provide transmit to the president pro tempore of the Senate and the Speaker of the House of Representatives that their written declaration that the president is unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office, the vice president shall immediately assume the powers and duties of the office as acting president. Now, the way I read that, you've still got to have the vice president's signature. But that language, or of such other body as Congress may by law provide, You know what? You know what's not in there? And people like Billable Rick and Steve in New York will appreciate this. Laws have to have a certain degree of unambiguity. Ambiguous laws have a way of being subject to attack. This, however, is an amendment to the Constitution of the United States, which means that it is co-equal to any other constitutional provision, and is superior to actual statutes passed beneath it. Or of such other body as Congress may by law provide. The more I read that, the more I become convinced that that is a pressure relief valve. That is a means by which Congress, both houses, can designate either members of Congress or perhaps a blue ribbon panel of forensic psychiatrists, psychologists, neurologists, neurosurgeons, etc., to determine the sanity or the you know, just generally, because we're not, there's nothing in there about being insane, but to determine the fitness of the president to discharge the duties of the office. How about that? So what would it mean? Well, what if, and we're in uncharted territory. We've had drunk presidents, but it was a slower, simpler time, and you could have a drunk president. We've had rapist presidents, but it was a time when a whole lot of people were committing a whole lot of rape, and so it kind of got swept under the rug. Not an excuse, just an observation. We've never been here before. On the one hand, from the looks of the first sentence of Section 4 of the 25th Amendment, the Congress can, by law, And by law doesn't mean that there has to be a pre-existing law. This amendment gives Congress the power. It says Congress may by law provide. It means Congress may pass a law that makes this possible. The House can pass it. It goes over to the Senate. And the Senate could conceivably pass it. That's a lot more difficult than getting it done in the House, quite obviously. But we are rapidly approaching that place that I have been talking about for too long. And, you know, when it does happen, or something similar to it happens, you know, it's not like a duck's going to drop down from the ceiling during the program or anything, because this is just a small community of people of goodwill who engage in conversation and attempts to find solutions to problems. There aren't a million people just, you know, a few thousand. But think about that. There could be the House could pass a bill, call it the Commission on Presidential Fitness. And that would create a body provided for by law, as that sentence of the 25th Amendment provides, to examine whether or not he's fit to remain in office. And my God almighty, after this weekend, is there any question left? I mean, is there anybody except the maggots whose bias is such that if he did get to that place that I've described, where he takes his clothes off and plays with himself in front of cameras, and the footage goes all around the world? I mean, we all understand that the maggots would say, look at that, he's making America great again, and he doesn't even have to have clothes to do it. God bless you, Donald Trump. But for the rest of us, the actual majority of America, I think we can safely say that there is a groundswell of suspicion, at least, that, as George Conway put it in his one-sentence, one-line tweet, his condition is getting worse. And do you think he calls it a condition, that he's just sort of yanking that out of the thin air? Or do he and his wife actually carry on conversations? Did you ever wonder, as odious as she is, as smarmy and fawning as she appears to be, do you ever wonder if Kellyanne Conway, who after all has a legal education, was the one who wrote the letter? You know the letter. The high-ranking administration official whose letter was published, and I can't even remember now, was it the Washington Post or the New York Times? And she keeps on going on whatever TV program will allow her and continues to appear to fluff Donald Trump so as to keep attention deflected from her. Just guessing, just speculating. It's the pure, don't, no, just, yeah. But a word like condition sounds like it came from somebody who knows of a, and this is one of those legal terms, pre-existing condition. You've heard about those in the insurance discussion. Does that sound like something? Because it kind of does to me. Here's another angle, though. What if a committee, say, House Judiciary, takes up questions of impeachable offenses? And what if in the course of impeachable, of taking evidence, taking testimony, they reach the inescapable conclusion that the president is, to use one of those complicated medical terms, knuckin' futz? They themselves could be empowered to act as such other body as Congress may by law provide. And before we go into the disclaimer that attends every one of these sorts of discussions, well, yeah, the Senate's not going to do anything about it, if he went absolutely cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs How long, I mean, there's, you know, the hardcore maggots ye have always with ye. But we saw them break, we saw 12 of them break ranks last week. Which is part of what so infuriated him in the first place. Everything infuriated him this weekend. I mean, this isn't Nixon bourboned and fenobarbed out of his mind talking to the portraits crazy. This is something beyond that. You could say that those Nixon accounts were a result of the environmental stresses around him. I don't think that's the case here. I think this is a progression of something that probably runs in the family. It'd be interesting if you could find someone who would talk candidly about, you know, granted, he lived into his 90s, Trump's Klansman daddy, Fred. But it would be interesting to find out how long before he met his demise, his symptoms began to manifest. And it's a larger civic question. Namely, if you've got an incapacitated president, do you just hope that the Republic will trundle on even though he's nuts? Again, as I've pointed out in the past, the 25th Amendment is a child of the Cold War as much as anything else. The Congress was finally pushed to action by the assassination of John Kennedy, but it's a recognition that there's a big damn difference between Franklin Pierce being drunk every day of his life, or maybe Warren Gamaliel Harding. I don't know if he was a drinker or not, but he's a scumbag. In that era, and a guy that is that mad and has access to the nuclear codes. Note coming in from Darlene in Connecticut. Yes, based on how Kellyanne Conway was portrayed in Woodward's book Fear, she plays all sides, texting reporters behind the scene, even against her boss. Condition, the word condition, is being used by her husband in a way that indicates he's in the know about something. And that was the sense that I got. There's a number of different ways to go with that short, simple tweet. The president is crazier today than he was the day before. The president is losing his mind. The president has lost his mind. His condition is getting participial worse, which is a comparative. Which means that there's some sort of baseline to which George Conway is unstatedly comparing his current status. Interesting thought, Irish Dave pointing out, but the diagnosis of F. Christ Drump's condition was early onset Alzheimer's. Was this malpractice that identified tertiary syphilis? Jesus, maybe. Nah. I was going to say maybe he's had it raging through his system from the moment that he was born. But I've been all day pondering, of such other body as Congress may by law provide. Because if that body, provided for by law by the Congress, Transmits to the President pro tempore of the Senate and the Speaker of the House of Representatives their written declaration that the President is unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office. The Vice President shall immediately assume the powers and duties of the office as acting President. And before you even send the emails or whatever, yeah, I know Mike. Yes, Mike Pence. Mike Pencilneck Geek. And Mother Pence, who couldn't even bring herself to, she had the vapors too, bring herself to be present for the St. Paddy's Day visit of the Prime Minister of Ireland because he brought his boyfriend. And instead, Mike Pence's sister had to do stand-in duty because Mother Pence probably would have gotten fired at that good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual Christian school where she teaches and they try to pray away the gay. Yeah, I know what a toxic nightmare he is. But I come back to a previous thesis. That cannot be part of the overall consideration in a moment of crisis that is greater than most people in this country perceive, although some may now be getting close to perceiving it. It's right there. Hidden in plain sight of such other body as Congress may by law provide. That other body could go to Mike Pence and say, listen, this isn't a loyalty thing. This is a science thing. This is a medical thing. He ain't okay. You're going to be the acting president. We've already drafted the letter. Okay. Yeah, first cowbell of the evening goes to Lee in New York. Bob, stop telling us not to send emails. Lee did that via email. So it kind of had a double whammy effect. Note coming from Todd in South Carolina. The subject in question appears to be in crisis. The substance abuse is not helping. Is not helping. And I don't know what kinds of conversations are being had in the, you know, inner sancta of various congressional offices. We're bombarded almost daily with the stories of this or that unnamed Republican who says, you know, God, he's terrible, but what can we do? Well, it's right there. It is right there in the first sentence of Section 4 of the 25th Amendment, what we can do. I mean, it would be lovely if maybe one of the highly paid legal eagle experts that shows up on the multimillionaire for-profit media would bring this up. Who knows? Maybe now that I've brought it up, it will be. For some reason or another, it's that whole out in front of the curve, out so far ahead of the curve that we feel like we're on straight road effect that we have here at the Horn, that what we talk about here winds up being breaking goddamn news a month from now in the multimillionaire for-profit media. And I didn't even have to break out the tattered old moth-eaten purple robe with the frayed appliqued moons and stars and "Will Thee Kiss Me in the Dark, Baby" written in glow-in-the-dark paint across the front of it, and my busted magic eight ball that always says, "Answer hazy, ask again later." There we go. Todd seems to be in agreement. Yes, Bob, the letter would provide the vice president cover. Because, see, the other thing can be, well, speaking of things of the 19th century, there's that old portrait, and I think I mentioned it on Friday on the front porch when John Bridavo was on with us. There's that old portrait of Sam Houston and General Santa Anna under what was called the Treaty Oak down Texas way. And as it was explained to me by a Texan one time, interpreting the painting for me, that there is Sam Houston, and that there is General Santa Anna, and Sam Houston is telling Santa Anna he can either sign that there paper or hang from that there tree. Well, it's kind of like that with Mike Pence. Mike, we've got a letter here. You've got a choice. You can either sign the letter, or we can hold a vote in about 5 minutes here on impeaching your white ass. What's it gonna be? It might be sufficient to get the job done. And it's worth remembering, and this is just another one of those one-liners that is best to hang on to. Paul Manafort chose Mike Pence. Yeah, because Marcus Aurelius, the maggot monarch, was all set to choose somebody else, maybe Chris Christie, to be his running mate. And Paul Manafort went out of his way to land in Talibandianapolis to have a sit-down with Mike Pence, and the next thing you know, Mike Pence gets the VP nod. Now, why the hell do you suppose that was? Aha! I was waiting for somebody to catch up with that. Jack in Shreveport says, but if there's not already a law on the books, wouldn't it mean Trump would have to sign and not veto one first? No, that's why you go to Pence with the letter. Because he's already crazy. He's incompetent to sign shit. And you'll notice it says, as Congress may by law provide, not as Congress may by law provide and the president approve. As Congress may by law provide. The process by which, for instance, the disapproval resolution was vetoed is baked into that statute. And that's only a statute. This is an express power given to the Congress. And not the president, because it focuses on the inability of the president to discharge the powers and duties of his office. Ron in Raleigh asks, if Orange Julius is indeed suffering from tertiary syphilis, wouldn't Stormy Daniels be showing symptoms by now? Could it be that he is asymptomatic at this point in his life? Adult film performers are tested on a regular basis. I'm asking for a friend. Well, Ron, tell your friend that it may be possible that he didn't transmit it. It may be that if it goes tertiary, it's no longer running around in amongst your little swimmers. I don't know that part. Or it may be like that story of Ty Cobb in his waning years. I had it once in a book called The Baseball Reader, back when we read these things called books. But it was a collection of some of the greatest writing ever about baseball. And one of those stories had to do with the night that a guy ran around with Ty Cobb, and Cobb was a vicious, racist asshole. And he made a big production out of hiring a hooker. But by then, he couldn't perform. Nothing about syphilis there, but he just couldn't perform. And so he paid her well, and part of the payment was to make sure that she said that he was an absolute tiger in the sack. See what I did there? Ty Cobb, tiger. The baseball fans will. So I don't know. Maybe that's what the whole spanking thing was about. Remember, another thing he was rage tweeting about this weekend was, of course, the Steele dossier, which, of course, contains the reference to the pee-pee tape. There's no allegation there that he had sex with any of the Russian hookers. He just watched. He might not even be able to... Well, maybe there's a reason he didn't go for a rub and tug with Robert Kraft down to the Cindy, what's her last name? Ling, maybe? I don't know. To her rub and tug parlor. $59 for a half hour, $79 for the whole hour. No bonus if you're done after five. There's no refund if you're done after 5 minutes. Somehow or another, this very serious conversation found its way into the gutter. But that's okay. The serious part of it stands on its own. And the only thing that saddens me out of this, beyond the fact that the president is mad as a March hare, and that's more frightening than sad, is that this is a conversation that we're having here that no one is having anywhere else. Ah, thanks to Nurse Agnes, we have a little bit of information on syphilis. Sometimes the syphilitic rash is so mild it's not noticed. In addition to rashes, persons in the secondary stage of syphilis might experience fever, swollen lymph, sore throat, patchy hair loss, headaches, weight loss, muscle aches, and fatigue. The symptoms of secondary syphilis will go away without treatment, but the infection will continue to progress and secondary symptoms can recur. Latent stage. Syphilis can remain dormant in the body for many years, typically between the secondary and late stages. During this time, symptoms are not present, but the infection remains in your body and is infectious to sex partners. The late stage of syphilis can occur anywhere from 2 to 30 years after initial infection. During this stage, damage can occur to the brain, nerves, eyes, heart, blood vessels, liver, bones, and joints. The damage may not show up for many years. In this late stage, as a result of the damage, a person might experience uncoordinated muscle movements, paralysis, numbness, gradual blindness, and dementia. The damage syphilis can cause to internal organs can result in death. A person is not usually infectious at this stage. Not saying, just saying. But it's, again, Irish Dave says, but Bob, in my experience, porn actresses practice the safe sex. Wait, do they even make condoms in tiny child size? Of course, the bigly liar claims that while the rest of the U.S. was fighting the VC, he was fighting the VD, venereal disease. And understand, within the context of what we're, the serious context of what we're talking about here, the or of such other body as Congress may by law provide part, there's no need to allege a particular condition. What we need is the magic words from the amendment itself. That the president is unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office. And I would submit to you that even that has a wider potential meaning than may at first appear in the language of the text. The powers and duties of the office of the President of the United States include both enumerated powers and duties and unenumerated ones. There are the powers and duties that are delineated, for instance, by the presidential oath of office. Clack, clack, clack. Let's see. I do solemnly swear or affirm that I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States and will, to the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. Nothing in there about Commander-in-Chief. Nothing in there about keeping America safe. The object of the presidential duties are the office of president and to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution. Those are enumerated. But the office of president of the United States consists of a lot of things. It consists of acting presidential, which is the antithesis of saying that the bikers for Trump might send the bikers for Trump out to beat the piss out of all of us if we do not bow to his goddamn will. See what I mean about unenumerated? Presidential decorum, presidential behavior, presidential conduct all falls within the powers and duties of his office as described in the first paragraph of Section 4 of the 25th Amendment. So that's... That was on my mind. Because I wake up every day wondering how much more this battered remnant of a republic can take. So maybe apply some of your own skull sweat to it. Let me know what you think. I'd welcome that conversation. And the stress line is open. Got somebody on the other line right now. And a whole bunch of moranity to get to. But I also appreciate the patience that people show in letting me, complete ideas when I've got one, and you know, it's like I look at Agnes and say, "I've got an idea." She says, "Be kind to it. It's in a strange place." Ba-dum-bum.
So anyway, let's run over and check in with Scott real quick, and then we'll move to the rest of Moran Monday. Hey, Scott.
Oh, hell, Bob, you know yourself that I spend half my life waiting and the other half wondering why. But it's worth it. I don't mind it.
Well, that's the existential nature of life itself, isn't it? Hurry up and wait.
It truly is. It truly is. And I will be quick today, okay? I hadn't even planned to be home at this hour today. I had an appointment to go do something else, and I got up late, and I said, let me reschedule that puppy because I don't like rushing around. But two things. I'll get to the I told you so in a moment. But last week I told you that I had gotten a DVD several weeks ago about Harold Hayes, who was the editor-in-chief of Esquire magazine in the 60s. And the DVD is called Smiling Through the Apocalypse. And you can get it for about $12 or so on Amazon. I recommend it highly. But there's a book of the same title, which is a huge doorstop of a book. It's a collection of essays and articles written by Esquire contributors in the 60s. And I had just started it the other night. And I know you don't like people reading on the show, but this is a short segment. And I must read it because of the wordsmithing. As a word knower and one who appreciates good wordsmithing, I think this will resonate with you as it did with me. And it was from a piece called Superman Comes to the Supermarket, written by Mailer. Okay. Norman Mailer, right? The writer. And it's about the 1960 Democratic and Republican conventions. But I think it fits in what may lie ahead in terms of ridding ourselves of this meddlesome Trump at some point. So let me, like I say, it's about political conventions, but I think the description that he gives fits what may be ahead. Okay, let's parenthetically say, getting rid of a sitting president is, after all, not a meeting of a corporation's board of directors. Well, in this case, it may be with the Republicans. It's a fiesta, a carnival, a pig rooting, horse snorting, band playing, voice screaming, medieval get-together of greed, practical lust, compromised idealism, career advancement, meeting, feud, vendetta, conciliation of rabble-rousers, fist fights, as it used to be, embraces, drunks, again, as it used to be, collective rivers of animal sweat. It is a reminder that no matter how the country might pretend it has grown up and become tidy in its manners, bodiless in its legislative language, hygienic in its separation of high politics from private life, that the roots still come grubby from the soil, and that politics in America is still different from politics anywhere else, because politics has arisen out of the immediate needs, ambitions, cupidities of the people, that our politics still smell of the bedroom and the kitchen, rather than having descended to us from chill punctilio of aristocratic negotiation. Mailer was a hell of a writer. I don't know that I agreed with him at all times, but doesn't that sum up political conventions of the era and how politics is practiced in certain sectors today?
Yeah, hard to imagine that was written by the same guy who threatened to beat the shit out of Gore Vidal.
Yes, I know, isn't it? But anyway, it is America's favorite spectator sport, Bob. Never mind football, never mind baseball or horse racing, or any of the other spectator sports. Our favorite spectator sport is political intrigue and drama. We saw it in Watergate. We saw it in a certain way with the impeachment of Bill Clinton.
But do you think it's always been that way, Scott? Because there have been phases in our country's history where it certainly was rough and tumble and blood sport.
Yeah.
Election day in pre-Civil War Kentucky post-Civil War Kentucky was every bit as much a night at the fights or a day at the fights as it was any exercise of political franchise.
Well, look at the film Lincoln that Spielberg, I believe, did.
Yeah.
You know, the maneuverings that had to be done to free the damn slaves, to do the Emancipation Proclamation. You know, there's bargaining that goes on. There's horse trading. There's I'll scratch yours if you'll scratch mine, if you will. But it's going to get your tickets early, folks. It's going to be fun. I mean, it's going to be horrifying, you know, that we've got to go through something like this. You know, it's an injury to our national psyche in a lot of ways. But on some level, it's good old-fashioned American political fun. You know, to see the idiots once again get their ass handed to them. So, and this is the last part of it. I'll get to the I told you so, Bob, part of the dialogue today. All right. After the election in 2016, oh, it seems so damn long ago, in the period of time between the election, immediately after the weeping and gnashing of teeth, and looking ahead with foreboding, okay, we had several conversations, you and me and the other Horn family members, about what does this portend? What have we to look forward to, okay? And I always take the long game if I can, you know, the this too shall pass chapter of the conversation, that yes, it's going to be ugly and nasty and scary and shit is going to be happening hither and yon, and it will not be pleasant, okay? But it, like everything else, does not last forever, even though it seems as if it's going to last forever. At some point, the things will coalesce, and people who need to get it will get it, and we will at long last be rid of this meddlesome Trump.
In the pre-nuclear world, I would agree with everything you just said, Scott.
Yeah.
In the nuclear world, which we inhabit, I cannot.
Let me
rephrase. No, it can't go on forever, but it can go on for never. We can reach the age of never with this guy. It can be tomorrow, a week from tomorrow, a month from tomorrow, a year from tomorrow, but he has it within his madness to take us all with him. What do you do, Scott, when you've been warned that is his mindset?
Who was the cabinet officer during Nixon's most tenuous time who kind of, with a wink and a nod and I believe a memo to those who needed to hear it, basically said ixnay on any orders A, that Nixon may, you know, any button pushing that might go on as he was crumbling before our very eyes? You don't think in this modern
Scott, here's the problem with that. That's extra constitutional. When we go to a place, and I've seen it all over social media, you know, the generals will never let that happen. When you are in a place where it's a matter of whether the generals will let it happen, you're not a constitutional republic anymore. You're a goddamn military dictatorship.
Well, it's not a matter of generals not letting it happen. You're looking at it, you haven't stepped back a bit to look at it, the big picture. Yeah, granted, That is not within our best behavior. But then again, we're dealing with someone, supposedly our chief executive, who is off the frickin' twig. I mean, and what other outcome could there be except for him to finally show himself to be that which he is, Bob?
Well, I mean, look, we've already passed that moment, Scott. It's dealt with some the interplay between Mattis and Kelly, when one of them looked at the other and said, "There's no fucking way we're going to go and do that."
Yeah. Well, and then
the business in fear, where the aides are desperately trying to keep papers off his desk. Nobody does that with a sane person.
Right. And good for them. But with the Republicans, and I think we might have seen a form of it or an inkling of it with the 12 Republicans in the Senate who opposed his emergency declaration. Now, granted, he vetoed it, and there don't seem to be the votes to override it. But it, to me, was an example of some of these people are seeing a law of diminishing returns with this guy Trump, okay? As election 2020 grows nearer, not just for the next president, but for a third of the Senate, and it's already not a favorable map for the Republicans currently in the Senate who are up to be voted upon in November 2020, but also for all of the House, and we saw what happened last time with the House. These guys are not idiots. Once they're elected, their mission, their prime directive, if you will, is to get reelected and continue, rinse and repeat for as far out into the future as they can see, because that's what they do, a lot of them. Well, they're seeing that this guy Trump is not, that it's becoming less secure in many ways to link their wagon to his star, if you will. I don't know if I mixed my metaphors.
Okay, you're getting some pushback from Steve in New York. Sorry, Scott, you're really understating it. This is not Nixon. We are 1,000 light years past Nixon.
No, that's why I'm saying it's not Nixon. You're right. It's not Nixon. We're in a different time zone with Trump. He's like Star Trek says, and this will be our obligatory Star Trek reference. With Trump, we are going where no man or nation has gone before. In some real way, this is uncharted territory, because who would have thought we could have possibly elected such a manifest lunatic, such an unprepared, uncouth, ill-mannered, possibly syphilitic son of a, to be our chief executive? What the hell were we thinking, okay? So, yeah, we're in a whole different thing, but I will say until my dying day, and it may be all of us going up suffused in an incandescent glow, as Tom Lehrer would put it. I will believe till my dying day, Bob, that we have within our system, and this comes from the genius of our founding fathers and mothers and folks, the part of the mechanism includes ways to deal with the unthinkable. And in this case, Trump is the unthinkable, not so much that he'll push a button and blow us all to smithereens, but that he is the one that nobody ever really imagined, but we planned for anyway, is what I'm saying. And I don't mean to, gainsay or naysay every argument that you throw, but to me, it's like there's no other outcome which is workable. If it's not this, if we don't in large measure figure a way to behave responsibly, and by we, I mean our people and our leaders, yeah, the inevitable will happen, and it will be horrible, and it will be over. So that shows me that the stakes are too high to do anything other than the proper thing when it comes to this guy Trump.
Well, so that leaves the question, what's the proper thing?
Well, the proper thing is to be sure that it is abundantly clear to those who are making the choices here that the man is just manifestly hyperhicolated, to use an old technical term, that
Jeb Bush, remember, please clap.
Oh God! Yes.
He was heard over the course of the last two or three days to suggest that it would be a good thing if there were people out there who would primary Trump. Because Jebbia, you remember back during 2015 and 2016 when a certain group of people hollered, "Ooh, Clinton dynasty, brooga, 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 Clinton dynasty."
Oh, yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah,
well, Jebbia still feels like he is entitled to be president.
Of course he does. What are you, nuts? Of course he does. As long as he has breath, he thinks that he's entitled.
But I'm after this weekend, and maybe I'm just hyperventilating. After this weekend, I mean, if we can step back to a time when presidents didn't behave like that, this weekend beat cats fucking. Okay?
I know.
50 plus damn tweets.
But I told you he was going to behave in this manner. You remember, I think I even used the old joke about the guy who caught a very severe case of a social disease, and it was showing up symptomatically, and he went to a number of practitioners of Western medicine, all of whom said, "You've got to have that thing cut off immediately." And this notion didn't work for the guy. So he went overseas and found up in the hills of some country a man, a wise old man, who practiced Asian medicine, practical folk medicine, remedies from roots and herbs and things. And he presented himself to the guy, telling him that the Western doctor said it would have to be cut off. And the man looked, the doctor, the old grizzled doctor looked and said, "Ah, no, this does not have to be cut off. It will fall off on its own in about 10 minutes. Okay, Trump will reach the point where the falling off of him, he'll have assistance in it. It's just that the reasoning behind the assistance that is given will be, it is readily apparent to anyone with a brain that it's time for him to go. And it'll be done responsibly and courageously and intelligently and beneficially. That's what I'm saying. And
my next question. How is it not readily apparent that this is that time?
To a lot of people it is, Bob, but you've got to reach a particular point. I don't know if it's nuclear physics or what it is, but there's a critical point in any process of physics or chemistry or whatever, and sometimes it's quick and sometimes it's a little slower, but it has to happen in order for the reaction and the result to occur. And we're not quite there yet, but each passing day moves us closer.
Are you not scared of what, are you not terrified of what there might constitute?
Well, I know what I mean by there. What do you mean by there? Because you make it sound like it's going to be way scary.
I hear about there, and
I'm thinking, oh, it'll be a matter of relief once it occurs, you know?
Well, as Asa suggests,
we can take a breath.
Trump may be in a brittle position right now, but all it takes is a phone call to Papa Vlad to orchestrate a 9/11 style operation for all that to change.
Who's making the call? And what occurs as a result of the call? That's what I would want to know.
Well, a 9/11 style operation.
Perpetrated by whom?
It's not who perpetrates it. It's who we blame.
Well, okay. I mean, what?
I mean, do you remember 2011 when Richard Clark went to George W. Bush and said, "This wasn't Saddam. Go back and look some more. I know it was Saddam. Come back and tell me it was Saddam."
I know. But aren't we wise to that now? Didn't we learn from that?
No, Scott.
If we didn't, then we deserve what happens. How about that? Try that on. See if that fits.
Well, some of the assholes may. Most people don't.
By God, if the Bush-Cheney
and by the way, say what you will. Oh, Jesus, I never thought I'd get to. Ooh, and me without no booze. I never thought I would get here, but hi, I'm here. At least, and anything that begins with at least Bush and Cheney, you know, it's gonna make me have to shower with bleach later. At least Bush and Cheney were not, at least neither of them, I mean, they were caught saying some mean, evil, stupid shit because they're mean, evil, stupid people. But neither of them were ever heard to say, "Well, what's the point in having nuclear weapons if you can't use them? Try to kill my daddy."
There you go.
Well, that's that orders of magnitude out past the sun that Steve in New York was talking about.
Well, I just refuse to believe. Maybe it's a case of impractical belief on my part, but I refuse to believe that there are not people in this world who know enough to keep the worst from happening. They know that it's, you know, presidencies are temporary at best. How many vice presidents have had to step in over the course of the country's history? You know, it's like I know that it's like stock performance. Past performance does not predict future performance. And just because it hasn't happened before doesn't mean it can't happen now. But I look at the scenario that people are putting out there to scare people, and it just doesn't compute. Because we have, even if you look at the way things are in the dialogue in this country today, we are the people who need to be are smarter than that. They're more capable than that. They are dedicated to the proposition that they'll do whatever they have to do within, you know, the bounds of propriety to keep the shit, the ultimate shit, from hitting the ultimate fan. I mean, hell, it may even be wired into us as human beings, the business of surviving. And you know, part of the dynamic of surviving is repelling things that could kill you. And we're talking about the big universal global kill you in the worst case scenario that some are describing. And I'm not going to go there, Bob. We just, it's like, yeah, that is a remote possibility. Now, yeah, maybe we should plan for a remote possibility, but we should not dedicate 90% of our efforts toward the remote possibility happening, because by its nature, it's remote. It's good to have it in mind, but your focus should be on something that is more likely to occur. And what I'm saying is more likely to occur is he will continue to deteriorate. The returns to the politicians whose future depend on being close to Trump, they're going to back away more and more, or they're going to face non-reelection. And they don't like non-reelection. And on our side of the aisle, we're ready. We got our clean uniforms on and our helmets and stuff, and we're ready to play. And we intend to kick some ass and tear down some goalposts.
I want to offer a little bit of clarity here. Hi, Clarity.
Right. Hi, Clarity.
I'm not saying any of this is an attempt. This isn't, Bob freaks out a few thousand people night.
No, I know.
That's not my purpose here. My purpose is to comment on and offer possible solutions to things that are happening right here, right now, that aren't remote possibilities. I don't know how to better put it, but I also come at this from what I've taken to referring to from time to time as me with my powdered wig and velvet knee pants on.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Constitution, while I am not one of those originalist assholes, I do recognize it came into existence at a particular place and time, and under a set of prevailing attitudes toward governance. I'm not going to take the social aspect of it in because it was a complete fuck up. I mean, slavery, no franchise for women, no franchise for non-property holders. And those were things that they began to talk about, even if they didn't do anything about it. They began to talk about it almost immediately because they recognized that it was a dire flaw in the system. James Madison, the guy who wrote the document for the most part, said we have got to expand the franchise beyond property owners or this thing will not last. People have to have a buy-in. And, you know, lo and behold, 90 years later, women finally got to vote.
Mm-hmm.
But
took a while,
what motivated me this evening is, like I said, the Conway tweet. And that looks like somebody who has some sort of inside baseball, because when somebody got around to asking Kellyanne about it, she said, "Oh, well, I may not have seen his tweets. I was busy with my children this weekend." Please.
All right. Yeah. Sell it to somebody who's buying, lady.
Yeah, but the larger point is that we've passed what I fear is a point of no return if we do not act. I mean, consider, if you will, as Steve in New York pointed out, he has a huge war chest already. He's got 1 million volunteers, and he's got a revamped digital campaign. There, his side, with whatever help whatever countries may be offering, has already retooled for shit we're not even close to ready for. And
yeah, but even in 2016, even with Hillary not being what I would call the perfect that year, beat him with 3 million popular votes. And it's only owing, I think, to poor campaign practices that the Democrats did not carry Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin, and maybe a few other places that we will very well likely carry in 2020. There are more of us than there are of them, Bob. It's a numbers game. And yes, it's true that only about 50% of eligible people bother to vote. If we focus our efforts toward those who are already on our side and further focus our efforts on relating to people who are not usually engaged, but who have resonance in their mindset about what our message is and our capabilities are, we can mop up this guy without hardly breaking a sweat. I'm telling you, what did you think last week, 10 days ago, let's say, about your equipment, the possibilities of getting the equipment that you needed? I think Todd pointed out, Bob, you gotta see it happening. You gotta buy into the notion of things, and with your mountaintop anti-mountaintop removal efforts in Washington, you could very well be on the cusp of reaching the outcome that you want. And it's occurring by way of that thing I say a lot. Behave in a manner consistent with creating a future that works positively and appropriately for all concerned.
Or the short version from Caddyshack: be the ball, Betty, be the ball.
Yes, you know, you're on the cusp of proving that notion out, Bob.
Well, I agree with it in those two limited instances. But I'm not there. I'm not there with this president because he had no campaign in 2016, and look what happened.
Yeah, I know. But we helped him in a way. When I say we, there were better people as the Democratic standard bearer. I think we all can be grown-ups about that. But we didn't play that way. That's not who we were. That's not what we were up to in 2016. Hopefully we will have learned from that enterprise as well. And nothing against Hillary, okay? I just don't think that she was the right person to be our standard bearer that year. That's just me. I wanted Bernie. Speaking of Bernie, he'll be in San Diego on Friday, if you're interested, anybody in the area who wants to go to a Bernie rally. I've been to one 4 years ago. They're great fun. There's something very American about going to a political rally with someone who is popular and also is by all appearances in his politics a decent person. It's like the mirror opposite of a Trump rally. You know, it's not just craziness. It's something about, you know, getting stuff done. And I know we got a lot of choices this time around, and I hope we choose wisely, because, you know, it's like the tagline on the Johnson campaign ads in 64, you know, the stakes are too big for you to stay home.
Yeah, and I'll probably catch some shit for this, but Bernie worried me this past week walking around with that big-ass bandage on his head, claimed to have fallen in the shower.
Well, I didn't see that. Oh, no.
Near octogenarians falling in the shower.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that what did in George Burns? And he was 20 years older.
Head injury got Kurt Vonnegut.
George, and I'll go on this note. George Burns had a longstanding contract for his 100th birthday to appear at one of the Vegas casinos, signed, notarized, all that stuff, and at some point before that, he fell in the shower and had a medical issue and wasn't able. I think he made it to 100, but was not well enough to perform on his 100th birthday. And that's scary. I don't like to hear of anything like that befalling Bernie or anybody else. If he may never be president, but he certainly has helped change the conversation and the mindset of people, showing us just
what he was talking about accessibility to college in 2016. It certainly looks like an entirely different conversation now that for instance, the college cheating scandal has broken. Operation Varsity Blues.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems to me that that's a more compelling argument than ever before for making state colleges and universities and community colleges more accessible to qualified students, because the Felicity Huffmans and the Lori Loughlins of the world are out there making sure that some deserving kid doesn't get in because their kid, who is an Instagram influencer, needs to be able to sit in the dorm room and pimp for Amazon.
And that, you know, the said, focusing our efforts and our message and our outreach this time around in 2020. Now, you got to know in your heart of hearts, Bob, that there are people on the right or the middle right, not the far crazy lunatic fringe right, but I'm talking about just the everyday folk who grasp the inequities in our society, and they see there's something wrong with those inequities being there, and they want that to change, and they would like somehow to participate in the changing of those inequities. Don't you think that we can appeal to someone of intelligence and love of country of that type to come on over to our side? I think it's
I think there are significant limits to that, Scott, especially given the way that the multimillionaire for-profit media portrays some of those ideas. I happen to be up at the before the crack of dawn, and caught the first 2 hours, you know, before they become a rerun of my filthy little habit this morning, and there they were wailing away on Beto O'Rourke. Well, he doesn't stand for anything. He doesn't have any policy ideas, and Mika almost blushed and fainted, saying, "I just can't wait for Joe Biden to get in the race." Jesus Christ, lady! He's older than Bernie.
Maybe you're creating your own problem here, and I don't mean to call it a problem, but I can't think of another word. Maybe it's like if you don't spend all that time in the fucking toy department stuffing yourself with Cracker Jack, maybe things would look different for you.
Well, I go over and I check out CNN. I don't go to Fox.
No, I don't blame you.
But you know, the program that follows my filthy habit with the former Deutsche Bank investor lady. Stephanie Ruhle.
Because I don't have.
Yeah, her lead story was, why is Beto getting all this attention?
Well, see,
her lead story wasn't the goddamn massacre.
I know. And that's why fewer eyeballs ought to be attached to that crap.
Well, I detached mine.
All it does is piss you off. All it does is piss people off and frustrate them. And God knows there's enough in life to piss you off and frustrate you without paying X number of dollars a month for cable service to sit there and watch that crap. And I don't mean to yell, but I do sometimes. You know me.
But I find it perversely entertaining.
American Journal. For Christ's sake, if the callers to American Journal upset you, don't watch the fucking show. You know? God damn it. And I know it pisses off Todd and Steve and George, but the solution. I mean, even if you go away from it for a week and look around you and hear birds sing and feed the squirrels and send $3 to the candidate of your choice and look at possibilities that you haven't taken the time to look at because you've been frothing at the mouth over what some asshat on television said or a caller
I've got an asshat to froth over here because he's not just some asshat. He's the part-time chief of staff, part-time head of the office of management and budget, and that was actually going to be the centerpiece of Moran Monday. But anyway,
Mulvaney?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, I was going to make this short. I didn't mean to go on this time because I'm trying to be aware of my length of calls. You know.
Oh, don't worry about it. No, you're fine. But we'll go on and take some more calls. But you know, I take it all into consideration, and I take it in stride. But you and I just have a different outlook.
Or I could be full of shit, Bob. I don't think so, and I don't think you think so.
No, but I think there's a little rose colored tint to those specs you got on, bud.
There certainly is, but some of it is grounded and founded in reality-based reality if you're willing to look at that wedge of pie of the pie called reality. That's all I'm asking anybody to do. Shift your focus somewhat rather than deliberately engage in behavior and observation that does nothing but upset you and piss you off, lift your eyes, expand your horizons, think in terms of possibilities, and the active participation of creation of the future that works positively and appropriately. And being about that in a conscious, aware way. And yeah, it sounds cosmic and zen, but we've proven it out with your on the road audio equipment. We may very well prove it out with your efforts in Washington in the coming weeks and months. You know, I'm just saying, you know.
I know. Scott, have a good night, man.
I will, Bob. And again, thank you for the forum to have these conversations. And anybody able
well,
to
let's,
do
let, let, me, let me let me let me say, I don't think you are, but I desperately want you to be right. I want to be the one who's wrong here.
You and me and both. But just my parting comment is, if you're at all able to do it, send a couple of bucks to Bob and the Horn. You'll feel better for having done it, and you'll put a few more bricks in the road for us to travel on in the future, because that's what it's about. It's the contributions of people from the past who brought us to the point we're at now, and we got to finance more bricks, because this path into the 2020 race is a critical path to be on, and this is a good resource for the being on that path. So that's my commercial for the show.
Thanks, Scott. I appreciate it, man.
All right, Bob. Take care.
All right. Later. Our buddy Scott calling from San Diego, and I'm not accusing him of being a Pollyanna by any stretch of the imagination. I simply think things are more desperate than they may appear. You know, objects in mirror may be closer than they appear. I've got competing, and I'll go back to the phones here in a minute. I've got competing opinions here. As for Bernie's shower fall, our buddy Texas T says, in reference to Bernie falling in the shower, I fell in my 40s. Remember Bush Jr. falling off the couch, choking on a friggin' pretzel? Oh, yeah, I do. I remember that very well. Please stop eating our own. Remember ABT, anyone but Trump, and stop listening to Squint and the Meat Puppet. Love always, Texas T. I agree with a great deal of that. Anybody can fall. We, you know, it's one of those curses of bipedal locomotion. Generally speaking, quadrupeds don't fall unless something really awful has happened to them. You know, I don't think there were any conversations back before humans decided to stop being knuckle walkers. You know, maybe we really ought to think about this whole business of bipedal locomotion, you know. It might come with some things that we don't necessarily want. We've been doing pretty good on our feet and our knuckles so far. Why should we change now? That's often the conversation that you get when you start talking about trying to rein in some of the excesses of capitalism, but that's not where we're headed. So that's Texas T on the one hand. There's no express statement about Bernie there. I'm sorry. I do believe there's a difference between falling when you're 40 or falling when you're 50 and falling when you're damn near 80, because bone structures change. And I don't want that to happen to him, because I like the guy. And Bernie with a broken hip is not my idea of a good outcome. On the other hand, Kim in New Jersey, Kim in Malin, a decidedly different take. Subject line, there is no there. There is no there for the people who voted for Trump. There's no there for the Republican enablers in the House and the Senate. There's nothing he's done or could do that will change the way those bastards support him. And remember, he'll be reelected in 2020, so we don't need to obsess about transition of power until 2024. If Bernie wins the nomination, he'll lose when they paint him as a socialist, which he is. He's not a Democrat. Fuck the Democrats for letting him run as a Democrat. If Bernie loses the nomination, his supporters will do what they did in 2016, screw the Democratic nominee and reelect that fucking racist. Signed, Kim in New Jersey. Like I said, I'm staying out of supporting anybody in the race, because there's still too much time between now and the first primary for a whole bunch of them to self-select out either by accident or by intent. And I think the other thing we have to take into account is somewhere in that mix there are, and I don't have any proof per se, but there are a group of them who are, I think, running for vice president. That's always the case. You're trying to make a case that you would be, well, if I can't be president, I'd make a good vice president. Because it's not a great, it doesn't make you a great odds-on favorite to be president, but it gives you a fighting chance. I'm staying out of endorsements. I've already stated my misgivings about anybody north of 70, especially anybody older than Julius Geezer. For God's sakes, we call him Julius Geezer. I'm not sanguine about the prospects of anybody older than him, or even the same age as him, as the nominee, because there ain't going to be much in the way of excitement. I wish Bernie was not as polarizing as he is, but in his own way, Bernie is every bit as polarizing as Hillary was. The Hilarians hated Bernie as much as the Burners hated the Hilarians, and that is not a recipe for success. As Scott noted, yeah, we've got $510 to raise. That would be 10 at 51 or 51 at 10, et cetera, et cetera. But we get the equipment fundraiser was a rousing success, and thanks to everybody who contributed to that. Now all we got to do is do the ordinary bill paying that goes on in this program, and that's 510 this evening, and then it just goes up from there. It's made more difficult by the fact that I'm not here on Wednesday, so in the remaining moments of the program here, if we could take a bite out of that, that would be most helpful. Irish Dave, wash your mouth out with fucking bleach. Joe Manchin for Veep or top of the ticket. See, I would have said he was too damned old. I think he had those ambitions at one point in time, but you'd have to have somebody who was practically a Republican. Oh, Jesus. You'd have to have somebody who was practically a Republican who would ever want Joe Manchin as a nominee, because Joe Manchin can't deliver more than 5 electoral votes. The light bulb lights up. Ron in Raleigh says, I've come to the realization that the Democratic establishment does not trust young people. DiFi, Miss Nancy are a combined 164 years of age. You don't have to look so far to see what the geezers have done to the country. The closer they get to their long home, the more fearful their legislation. Yeah, and with a better mindset, your elders are more concerned with the coming 7th generation than maybe even the young people are, because they're closer to eternity. But for some reason or another, it doesn't seem to work out that way, Ron. Let's run over to the stress line and check in with Todd. Hey, Todd.
Bob, good evening. How are you doing?
It's Monday. I'm feeling pretty perky.
Well, that's good. That's the first I heard of Agnes, and my positive thoughts go out. I had no idea.
Thank you. Well, it's scary, and made more so by the fact that she got diagnosed a few months ago. But the scary part is how long has she had it, and how much damage has been done, and that's what worries her and worries me. So maybe we start getting some fucking answers on Thursday when we go to the not a doctor.
Wow, that's a whole program, the medical care. You know, that's frightening. That's frightening. Wow.
Yeah, and it's a 320 mile round trip. I mean, what's 160 miles from you, Todd?
My God, I could be in Charleston.
and well out into the Atlantic too, right?
Yeah, well, sure, right. I mean, yes. I mean, God, I could. Yes. Yeah, this is a small state, geographically. Yeah, that's a hike. That's just insult to end. I don't want to use that.
I used to make that trip all the time when it was for much more lighthearted reasons. That's, you know, you get up about 6 o'clock in the morning, and you make your thermos full of Bloody Marys for when you get there, and you go up for Mountaineer Game Day. And you party in the parking lot, go in, watch the game. By then, you know, everybody's nice and sober, and you go back home.
That's the routine. That's what works.
Yeah, but this is not that. It's the same place. We'll park in the same parking lot where we would park for a football game, but no.
That the second question you said, but how long has it, you know, how long for that? I don't even know if they can answer. I don't know that much about that ailment, but no, that's a good question. And, you know, all I'm saying is that, you know, doctors are a lot like mechanics. There are a lot of car mechanics around, but if you notice, they're not all good, and the good ones, it's hard to get an appointment.
Yeah, and in some cases, and some of this has to do with making the coverage pay as much as it possibly can. So she'll go in and see the not a doctor, and then if the not a doctor deems it appropriate, they'll schedule her for another appointment to come back and see the yes a doctor.
Procedure. Yeah, we have to do something about this.
Because that way you're doing basically one thing for double billing.
Right. Right. Wow, that's disgusting. Well, that's really sad. I know you that would that. I can imagine how you felt. I'm sorry. I don't even get into that. It's too much right now. Wow. This segues. I'm glad you were so strong about your argument with Bernie. Well, strong about a number of things, but you know. Anyone who's around older folk, I mean, it's not like I'm making this up, but the statistics show indicate that, you know, once an older person, it's like a graph, it's a chart. So once you're over 72, 73, if you fall, that's not good. But if you're 75, 80 and you fall, there's like...
It's kind of like the Richter's. It's kind of like the Richter scale.
You know, right. So he's going to fall again. Most statistics would indicate that he's going to fall again. When you start falling, you keep falling. That's what I'm trying to say. It's not pretty, but that's what happens a lot.
Well, do you remember, I think it was the first time she came to the White House after Julius Geiser got in, Theresa May, Prime Minister of the UK?
Mm-hmm.
You remember how he was walking down a slope with her and he almost involuntarily or automatically reached and grabbed her arm to stabilize himself because they were walking.
He was about to fall.
Because they were walking down a slope.
He couldn't navigate it. He has trouble navigating the step. When he goes up on the dais, he has trouble navigating his gait, the way he shuffles.
Shambles.
He's got that old shambles, right? He's right. I mean, it's all there. It's all there. It is all there. And, you know, I think that he keeps abusing the speed, you know, whatever type of speed it is, because temporarily, you know, it does give him clarity, most likely, since his mind is deteriorating. Because, you know, he's got the mental illness, you know, he's got all types of things going on with him. But now there's the Alzheimer's / dementia that's kicking in, which we all know can be exacerbated not only because he has a higher risk factor because of his family history, but, you know, other reasons, like that tertiary syphilis, which, there's a good chance that that's true. There's a good chance because, remember, he sent his thugs in to seize all of his medical records from the deadhead-looking doctor, if we remember.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up because part of what would be called a pattern in practice. He can't stand to have any sort of records of his prior conduct, prior behavior, prior life out there.
He can't.
You know, a guy who was a solid high C, low B student in college is not going to sweat the records coming out.
No.
But a guy who was creeping through with gentlemen's D's, who has spent his life telling people how smart he is? No.
What sane person do you know that is in a respectable position? I'm not even going to say the president, but a respectable position, like the president of the Rotarian Club or someone of stature in the community. Who says, well, I have the best brain? Who the hell says that?
I know some people with best brains. I happen to be blessed, if the word can be used, by calling some of them friend. And Dr. Bill O'Brien has never bragged to me about the quality of his brains. He's just let his brains be the proof.
Braggadocia is one thing, but that...
Yeah, that's not braggadocio, Todd, what Julius Geezer does. That is fear-based... what's the word I'm looking for? It's driven by fear and insecurity. It's not bragging. It's like a preemptive strike. Don't question my intelligence because I'm already so smart.
Well, he's trying to deflect. In other words, most of what he does is opposite. Many things that he says, it's the opposite, or it's actually, it's the opposite. You know, he projects, he deflects, because that's all he can do. Now, and you know, who knows? He may not read because he's too vain to. I don't understand why he didn't get LASIK. Or, you know, I can understand he doesn't want to wear glasses because that's his personality. However, he doesn't like to read either because he has, like, attention deficit disorder or because he's dyslexic on top of everything else, which I wouldn't doubt. You know, maybe that's why he doesn't like computers. And, it's just too much. The keyboard, oh, I can't stand that. Oh, get away. You know, all those letters running around. See, that's what happens. If you talk to someone who's dyslexic, that they will. Many people will describe the letters float around. You know, they can't just focus on the letters. But, you know, we've been talking about his mental illness for, you know, way too long. So I'm just glad that the professional, then we have to. And this is, all right, this is a perfect segue. This is why I want to push back on Scott. This is a perfect segue. We've had not just Dandy Lee. There have been other mental health professionals who have put themselves out there to warn us about this president. And they've made it clear that in some cases you can diagnose from a distance because it's a pattern of behavior. And like I've been saying, anyone who's lived in New York, I've been looking at this guy since I was a teenager because he was always in the New York Times, and we had to read the New York Times. That was part of our curriculum.
Yeah, and, I was going to bring that up, Todd. Not that I'm just looking for somebody to pin the blame on, but why didn't somebody take the piss out of him a long time ago in one of the most brutal media markets on earth?
That's a good question.
Was it because he was a funny clown to have in the papers? Was it because he was entertaining, that he, you know, that he, I mean, it, you know, New Yorkers are known for being, thick-skinned, and you know, you can't shock them, you can't surprise them. So, you know, he's a clown. You know, at least he makes me laugh.
Well, there's that, and clowns, just as we noticed, asked Joe and Mika, they're good for business. Right? They're good for business going on the way up, and they're good for business on the way down. Ask Joe and Mika. Right? But then there's another possibility where he might have had thugs, PIs, digging up dirt and blackmailing people to keep quiet, too. because he does pay off people. We know that. This is a catch and kill. See, everything he does is shady. That's why I used to say, well, I still say, I mean, you know, the professionals are saying he's a narcissist, and I agree with that, but they're not saying he's a sociopath. They probably don't want to go that far, but I'm looking at his whole, like, everything he's done. Look at the way he operates his businesses. He will charge things up, doesn't want to pay people, doesn't care, no empathy, delusional. See, and those two diagnoses, they meld in a way. But that's what I'm saying. It's so much going on with him that's wrong. But it will all come out. But and this is another segue. This is what I wanted to get into also. Your argument, I think, is great in terms of using the Constitution in that way. Because Pence is dirty somewhere. He's been in those meetings. He's dirty somewhere. We don't even know what he's told Giuliani yet. You know, we don't. But that would give Pence cover because he could tell. Because remember, we're dealing with these maggots. They're angry already. They can tell something's going on. Remember, and that's the great white hope. They're defending him at any cost. At any cost. Because when he gets hurt, they feel pain. That's their president. See, that's the dangerous part. That's what we're dealing with. And I never, Nancy Pelosi, people were not paying attention to what that professional was saying. She said, no, impeachment. I'm not talking about that now unless. And so she's letting the investigations, just the evidence is just going to build up where she's going to say, well, this is just the Constitution dictates that we have to move in this fashion. But now you've got me frightened, honest to God, because it's not like I wasn't frightened before. We don't have time to waste anymore. We just don't. These 50 tweets, now, wasn't there a flood in the Midwest this weekend?
Yeah.
An ongoing flood?
In the part of the country that lives and dies for him.
Where are the tweets about that?
No, nowhere. They didn't happen.
Well, that's a problem. And I'm trying to be very moderated tonight because this is really, I'm frightened. And this is, I want to, and everyone loves Scott's, I'm sure, well, I don't know about everyone, but I know many people love Scott's.
Oh, I know you do.
Yeah, well, Scott is a good radio personality person. Come on. He is a great storyteller. He is. And I try to be fair when I agree with someone, I say so. Like with you, if I don't agree with you, I'll say so. It doesn't mean I don't like you. Just because I don't like Netanyahu doesn't mean I don't like Jews. Just because people around the world hate us, hate Trump, doesn't mean they hate the United States.
Or that they hate Todd. You know, right.
Right. So my point with that is that We have to be cognizant of what she's saying. So all these investigations, the weight, there's going to be so much weight, but we don't have time. See, this is what Scott is missing. I agree, it's too rosy because this is not how it used to be. This is not. The institutions are eviscerated.
I mean, this isn't like, you know, picking on. I would have said this. I have spent a lot of time poring over admittedly somewhat brief history of this country. I mean, if you compare this country's existence with, say, one Egyptian dynasty, you could fit this country's history into, you know, an eighth of one Egyptian dynasty. You could fit this country's history into one period of Mayan history. The only country that is roughly, they're the only body politic, if you will, that's roughly equivalent in time would be, say, the Mexica, the people we call the Aztecs, with whom I'm so fascinated. You know, from about 1100 to 1519. And then the party was over. we don't have a lot of history, but there's a bunch of, there's relatively speaking a bunch, which is 45 presidents.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you've played in the world in the field of statistics, Todd. You know, with a sample size of 45, you'd think you would have somebody to compare to. I mean, for instance, at the beginning of the program, I compared George W. Bush's filthy little war against the innocent people of Iraq with James Knox Polk's filthy little war against the innocent people of Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are distinct similarities.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't find another Trump out there.
There hasn't been.
Franklin Pierce was apparently the drunkest president we've ever had. Warren Gamaliel Harding was comparatively corrupt. You know, the Teapot Dome and all of that stuff. But Washington was said to behave, although, you know, he made the argument he didn't want to be king, he damned well behaved like a monarch and insisted on being referred to as Your Excellency and that kind of stuff. Donald Trump is a rapist. Well, Thomas Jefferson was a rapist. But there's nobody that encapsulates him. There's nobody that has... Well, first and foremost, all of those people, all of those presidents, were pretty serious about being unabashedly American.
Right.
And about being a representative of the American experiment. This guy isn't. The whole reason, you know, yo, what about America First, Bob? Well, America First isn't about America. America First is about fascism.
America First came from Germany First, which is a fascist doctrine.
Well, look at...
Where don't people understand?
I hate...
He told us who he was. He told us he was using the fascist model. The first fucking thing he did was denounce the press.
I hate running off to the Third Reich, especially when I think there's a better example, and that's Mussolini. Mussolini literally leveraged you know, what would have been called back then bikers for Benito.
Oh, wow.
And they went around and they beat the shit out of people that they decided were not sufficiently dedicated to the cause.
Well, he definitely got the hand gestures.
And so that's what I was going to do with Friday on the front, or Friday with Moran Monday, was I was going to focus on this clip of Mick Mulvaney.
Oh, don't play that shit.
I'm sorry. But it needs to be heard. And the funny thing
is did you hear this? This is what I'm talking about, the weakening of the institution. Do you know what? We have been weakened to the point when facts come out, now you have a statistically significant number of our country people will not believe the facts because they are living vicariously through the Great White Hope, who is a drug addict and a mentally ill person.
Yeah, who has, as George Conway describes it, a condition.
He's in crisis. A crisis is like, okay, well, you know, they're muddling along with their mental illness, but when it flares up and they're out of control, that's crisis. That's when you got to take them to Bellevue.
Well, that's back to last week. That's that question of, are they a harm to themselves? You know, question one, do they suffer from a mental illness or addiction? Question two, if yes to question one, are they a harm to themselves or others?
That's two.
Okay, if you answer yes to both of those questions, then off you go for a status exam. Even if you're the president of the United States.
Well, that's why exactly what you... Let me ask you a question. How many married women do you know, have heard of, that actually report their husbands for rape and have bruises? Not just saying he hit me or something, but actually physically have bruises.
A state like this, you would be hard-pressed to convict. A prosecutor might be enough of a hard ass to charge it, but you're going to, there's, juries, well, you know, that's our business.
Well, Donald Trump has a charge. It was dropped, but I'm just saying.
Yeah, I know.
And just a quick question, because this has just been burning me up, like the not tweeting about the floods. You know, he was geeked up, man. He was geeked up tweeting, but I'm just going to move on from that for a second. What? All right, he's talking all this trash to GM about what they need to do because they're supposed to be making cars.
Not just to GM. No. He decided it was the UAW's fault.
Well, that's because they don't like the union. Now, who is asking him, sir, how much of your paraphernalia is made in the United States?
That would be zero.
Well, why is no one asking this very simple question?
I think in one sense, because they're overwhelmed, there's too many other supposedly bigger questions. And the other is that they, you know, it may not even dawn on them. It's like this clip. Hang with me here. We're going to go with the clip.
I'm sorry. Yeah,
We're going to go with the clip from Chris Wallace interviewing Mick Mulvaney. It's noteworthy for a number of reasons, but one of the reasons it's noteworthy to me is, as usual, what's not there.
The White House Chief of Staff, Mick Mulvaney. Mick, welcome back to Fox News Sunday.
Good morning and happy St. Patrick's Day.
Yes, thank you. And I forgot to wear a green tie today, but thank you for bringing that up.
I wasn't going to say anything.
What's the latest on the investigation into the New Zealand massacre? Is there any sign it's part of a larger conspiracy? And what's being done to beef up security around mosques in this country?
Yeah, I won't go into any of the specific of the discussions that we have with our allies. By the way, the New Zealanders, the Kiwis, some of our very closest allies in the global war on terror, some of our closest friends, we share a great deal of information with them. So
yeah, he's not going to go into the details because there are no details.
No details.
One of the problems with this, with stochastic terrorism, is that the only thing you can do is kind of guess that after Donald Trump, for instance, engages in stochastic terrorism, that somebody's going to do something somewhere. And then, well, you know, we sure like our Kiwi friends. You know, the Prime Minister of New Zealand asked him to do one specific thing, and he couldn't do it, Trump.
He couldn't do it. He cannot.
That was to condemn Islamophobic violence. Remember when he was running around the country saying, well, you know, Barack Obama, he's never going to beat the war on terror because he won't say Islamic terrorism. Well, this fucker won't say Islamophobic terrorism. But I guess that standard doesn't apply to him. But anyway, let's go back to this lunacy.
It was especially hurtful, I think, to see this happen to some of our people that we consider to be our closest friends. The president talked to the prime minister yesterday, so this is a truly sorrowful and tragic event. But we have no indication that this is part of a larger conspiracy. I don't think we've taken any we've suggested any additional security here in the United States. But clearly they are going through some terrible times in New Zealand. I understand they're taking some steps in New Zealand. There's concern that folks might be involved down there. I think they've made suggestions about how to operate mosques in the next couple of days. So
how to operate mosques? What does the mosque have a grist mill in it or something?
What is that supposed to mean?
Well, it means exactly nothing, Todd. It's sound and fury signifying nothing. But, you know,
there you go.
and we especially hate it because it happened to one of our friends. So I guess if some right winger went in and shot up a mosque in Addis Ababa, no biggie, because, you know, we're not so friendly with them. In point of fact, remember, Addis Ababa was near where the Ethiopian air crash went down. And did he extend condolences to the Ethiopians, or did he send out a tweet complaining about the plane being too complicated?
I'm feeling like this current administration and the leader of this administration, has a habit of inciting hate, which I think is against the law.
Well, yeah. So let's go back just for it. I know it's crazy making, but we got to just we'll just chew through a little bit of this.
Truly, truly tragic situation.
In his 74-page manifesto, the shooter wrote this. I want to put it on the screen. Are you a supporter of Donald Trump as a symbol of renewed white identity and common purpose? Sure. What does the president think of that?
Yeah, in fact, I'm a little.
Well, the president doesn't think, but the excuse is cute, I guess.
Disappointed you didn't put up the next sentence, which the next sentence, because I looked at it last night, was, what about for his policies and as a leader? And he said, dear God, no. I don't think it's fair to cast this person as a supporter of Donald Trump any more than it is to look at his sort of his eco-terrorist passages in that manifesto and align him with Nancy Pelosi or Ocasio-Cortez. This was a
Wait, he didn't mention Nancy Pelosi or Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. He mentioned Trump.
Disturbed individual, an evil person, and to sit to try and tie him to an American politician of either party probably ignores some of the deeper difficulties that this sort of activity exposes.
And otherwise kind of points out the true exact textbook definition nature of stochastic terrorism.
I want to make it clear. I take your point, and I want to make it clear. The only person responsible for this slaughter is the shooter, not President Trump. But some critics have said that he has contributed over the years to an anti-Muslim climate. Here is one of his statements from the campaign.
I think Islam hates us. There's something there that there's a tremendous hatred.
And after the attack, Democratic Senator Kirsten Gillibrand tweeted this. Time and again, this president has embraced and emboldened white supremacists, and instead of condemning racist terrorists, he covers for them. And some folks were disturbed that after we saw the manifesto, after the shooting, which said that he was doing this to kill, quote, invaders, the president said this when he was signing his veto message.
People hate the word invasion, but that's what it is. It's an invasion of drugs and criminals and people.
I understand, and I very much agree that the president is not responsible for this action. But has he considered, given the fact that some people seem to feel that he has given them cover, has he considered giving a major speech condemning anti-Muslim, white supremacist bigotry?
Now, that's a very specific question, isn't it? And so but it's also yes or no. Has he or has he not?
You've asked a couple of questions. So let's go back and talk about what Senator Gillibrand said. Look, there's folks who just don't like the president, and everything that goes wrong, they're going to look for a way to tie that to the president. So they see the word invaders in the manifesto. They see that passage and they say, oh, my goodness, there must be some connection between this. That's just absurd to say that there's some type of connection between being against illegal immigration, which is what the veto was about, for legal immigration, and the ruthless live streaming of murder of 15 people. The two things have nothing to do with each other. So
okay,
I recognize
but
the fact.
Let's forget all of that. To the degree let me just ask. To the degree that there is an issue with white supremacist, white nationalist, anti-Muslim bigotry in this country, and there is an issue with that, why not deliver a speech condemning it?
Right. You've seen the president stand up for religious liberties, individual liberties. The president is not a white supremacist. I'm not.
Why did he have to? There's my question. Why did he have to laugh when he said the president is not a white supremacist?
You know why?
No, I mean, why?
We are in this space. We are in this space where the chief of staff of the president of the United States, on their surrogate news, premier news channel, their house organ, has to even defend a question. Is the leader of the free world a white supremacist? Which means if this were court, you had to work your way up from municipal court to state court. You got to work up through all the courts, and you are at the Supreme Court. Sir, Are you a white supremacist, or have you ever been a white supremacist?
Well, yeah, and the thing is, and this is one of those great moments in failing Fox attempts at journalism. When he cited the invasion language from Friday, and he comes back with this, why doesn't Chris Wallace then say, well, okay, well, how about the Coast Guard guy that was going to murder a bunch of Democrats who cited Donald Trump? How about the guy who mailed pipe bombs and cited Donald Trump? How about the guy who murdered 11 elderly Jews in Pittsburgh who cited Donald Trump? At some point in time, these things almost look like clues.
Holy cow.
Instead, we get this.
Sure, how many times we have to say that, and to simply ask the question every time something like this happens overseas, or even domestically, to say, oh my goodness, it must somehow be the president's fault, speaks to a politicization of everything that I think is undermining sort of the institutions that we have in the country today. Let's take what happened in New Zealand yesterday for what it is, a terrible, evil, tragic act, and figure out why those things are becoming more prevalent in the world. Is it Donald Trump? Absolutely not. Is there something else happening in our culture where people think, you know what, I think today I'm going to go on TV and live stream me murdering other people? That's what we should be talking about.
So absolutely not, and then just move on. Maybe he played violent video games. Wait, could it be he was suffering from, I don't know, economic anxiety? Because remember, he said he didn't go to college because nothing in college interested him. Just a little bit more, and then I promise we'll be done.
The politics of the United States.
If I may, all I'm saying is the president speaks out about a lot of things that he's not responsible for, and he doesn't feel that there's any link. Terrorism. Why not make a speech and make it clear that there is no place in America for this kind of hatred?
Well, I think you saw that yesterday in the tweet. I mean, the president, not sure what more you want the president to do. You may say you want to give him a national speech to address the nation. That's fine. Maybe we do that. Maybe we don't. But I think you get down to the basic issue.
No,
the president is doing everything that we can to prevent this type of thing from happening here. The president is doing everything that we can to make it clear, look, this has to stop. The work that we do, including, as I mentioned at the outset, with our Kiwi friends, to prevent this happening is the very central part of defending this nation, which is how the president spends a great deal of his time. So, look, it's a tragedy, and I get that. And we're in a hyper-partisan sort of time in the country, and I get that. But that doesn't mean we need to marry these two events.
Okay.
So I'll just stop there. Even though, you know, this guy, this multimillionaire who gets on TV and fancies himself a journalist, can't even be prepared enough to say, okay, so it wasn't the invasion language. Well, what about the Coast Guard guy? What about the bomb guy? What about the murderer in Pittsburgh? Because what about all the times that David Duke has endorsed him and said, yeah, well, I mean, he has to say the Trump has to say that because, you know.
No, that's what I'm talking about. These two older white men have failed America, these two guys. And I only say that because that's who they are. And they represent an institution. And that institution is white supremacy. Because Chris Wallace, he may mean well. I don't know him. He's toeing the line. In his mind, he tries to be fair. But he missed a lot of just plain old, a junior high student would have asked some certain questions. You know, like, what about this recent inciting of violence by the president, saying I have the police
behind me? Yeah, how about asking Mick Mulvaney if he's ever heard of stochastic terrorism?
No, he wouldn't. He doesn't know. He's not.
No, next question.
Yeah.
Who's your barber?
How about that?
Yeah,
who's your barber?
Right, yeah. How about the gun store in St. Louis called Tactical Shit? Or it's SH*T. Apparently, on their Facebook page, they put up a survey. You know, we see that stuff. How do you scare quotes, feel about the New Zealand shooting? This poll is because in our posts and news stories, our shitheads
seem pretty divided. We in no way are indicating our opinion, just want yours. How do you feel about the New Zealand shooting? It's a horrible tragedy. It's fucking great.
Oh my God.
15% of the people responding said it's fucking great.
That's a good clue. That's that hard, you see? That's the core of the core. That's that hardcore. See, this is what Scott is missing. We're past. This is not going to go away overnight.
And then there's the most notorious white supremacist in the House of Representatives, Steve Cantaloupe's King of Iowa. And he posted a meme and got busted and immediately tried to unpost it, but too late. It was a pair. We're of a certain age, Todd. You remember Rock'em Sock'em Robots?
Oh, how many tournaments have you played, Bob?
Oh God, I loved that game.
Where is it? It has to be around, please.
I somehow doubt it, but I remember it well. Well, it looked, you know, there was a red one and a blue one, remember?
Mm-hmm.
And if you clocked it just right, his head would ping on the spring.
That was a knockout.
So he posts this meme. Folks keep talking about another civil war.
Mm-hmm.
One side has about 8 trillion bullets, while the other side doesn't know which bathroom to use. And Steve King reposting it says, wonder who would win, wink.
That's a weakening of an institution. Here we have a congressman siding with violence against citizens. I mean, black people know what that means.
Interestingly, though, he's such a dumbass, Steve King, he didn't realize that the blue Rock'em Sock'em robot, and see, they're made out of the outlines of the states. For instance, California and Nevada are the chest of the blue robot. Alabama and Texas and Oklahoma are the chest of the red robot.
Oh, how clever.
But here's the best part. Iowa is part of the blue robot. You know, where people don't know which bathroom to use.
Right.
Steve King.
Don't like guns.
Steve King's state. Iowa.
Well, he must have gone to the same school Trump did. He doesn't read well.
But this, you know, this Civil War shit turns them on.
Yeah.
And that's one of those places where you can find historical precedents. And you can find it in what passes for the congressional record of 1850 to 1860. Another time when what passed for norms went all to pieces. How'd that work out?
Did it work out, Bob?
Well, I mean, the people who were doing all the violent talk wound up getting their asses kicked.
Yeah, but the ideology didn't die.
No, it was allowed. It was allowed to. It was allowed to reroot. Had Reconstruction been followed through on, it wouldn't have. But it was allowed to.
And I don't mean that in a bad way. I'm just making an observation because, you know, history. And history is not given enough credence in school. I mean, you have a law school, you have a business school. With their history over there with English, and they can have English and history. They can have their own building. Psychology, you get this big tower, and you have secret floors. And, I mean, seriously.
Oh, and by the way, Texas Tea, you'll get a kick out of this. Texas Tea kicked in. So did Alma. Alma and Texas Tea kicked in, so we managed to take down the fundraising goal down to 460. Thank you, both of you. Texas,
that is beautiful.
Texas Tea says, Bob, you ready for that commune in New Mexico yet? And then I have a Rock'em Sock'em NIB. New.
What is NIB?
New Inbox.
Oh, man. Yo, that's worth. Oh, I don't know what kind of plastic they made out of. Because, I mean, think about it. They're young boys playing with this game, which just, if it was regular plastic, it would easily be just destroyed within, you know, a few hours, probably. I mean, because this is like a physical game, you know. I have not thought about Rock'em. When was the last time I thought about that? Holy cow.
You know, at one point, we had a Simpsons version of the classic game Operation.
Oh, I thought you would say Rock'em Sock'em with Simpsons.
No, we had a Simpsons Operation with Homer as the patient, you know, take out wrenched ankle and all that.
Oh. You couldn't get out that doobie out of his stomach that he swallowed in 1973.
Yeah, no, sorry, that's inoperable.
Well, do you think you phone now? If you can't, it's too late. Listen, so tell me more about the equipment that was just, man, that's beautiful. You know what I'm saying? So Scott is right in what about some things, not a lot of things, most things. But tell me more about your new gadget.
Well, I'm totally stoked. It'll be here Wednesday, hopefully, before we leave.
Mm-hmm.
The gizmo will. I'm still looking. I'm still trying to choose a laptop. You know, there's a budget and everything. So, the gizmo's. It's called a Rode Procaster, made in Australia.
R-H-O-D-E?
No, R-O-D-E.
Okay.
And I opted for that because the thing I wanted, like I said, is no longer apparently made. But this thing has features of its own, like, I guess, built-in software-driven EQing on the fly.
Okay.
It's got space for, like, 4 microphones. You can do... One channel will carry audio from the computer. You've got 2 other channels that one of them can be Bluetooth from a cell phone, and the other can be a cell phone just with a 1/8-inch plug.
Do you have a framed out board to put, like, at least have a little nest for each piece of equipment, or is just like a? I mean, I'm trying.
No,
I'm
one
trying
of the
to get
the, one,
I'm just curious.
No, one of the things I'm going to try to find is a good road case for it.
Okay. Oh, so you're saying you'll be able to use this remotely when you're out of town?
Yeah, that's the whole point.
Well, that's kind of what I... Okay, now... Okay, wow. 4 microphones. So you might be able to do the whole show on the road.
Yeah. Phones...
Yeah, I missed that part.
Phones, Skype, the works.
Well, shoot. No wonder. That's beautiful. Good grief. Man, that's great. Wow. Wow, that's beautiful. So will you be able to use it, like, in the home studio, too, or are you just going to
there's a possibility I will. I might be able to start using it here.
This is the Gizmo line, and it is crystal clear tonight.
Some of that, and we're off in the weeds of technology now. Some of that has to do with what kind of a connection you've got to your tower or my tower. Mm-hmm. Some of it has to do with the given phone.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it has to do with the quality of the internet itself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not nearly as easy as it was back in the day when there was one phone company and everybody had the same kind of phone.
Right. I can see that. I mean, I can imagine that. Because people are coming through at different levels and yeah. Wow. Oh, you'll get a kick out of this. On the internet today, they had a commercial. As a matter of fact, it was a commercial I was listening to MSNBC online through TuneIn. They had a commercial for Frontier.
Oh God, I am still wrestling with them. This one hyper expensive line that hasn't worked right in over a month. I've rebooted it four times during the course of the program.
No, Bob, according to their commercial, they have the best internet ever. This copper, I'm telling
yeah,
you.
No.
Look, I believe them. They sound happy. There's kids and dogs and frisbees and stuff. But no, I don't. It works. I mean, we have to do something about this cable. Number one, we got to get a la carte so you can get cable. You shouldn't have to pay for things you don't watch. And number two, we need choice. That is bullshit, and everybody needs choice. Like, we need to choose. I want to go back to being frightened. And Scott, listen, I watch Washington Journal. Many people do because we want to hear what fellow Americans think. It gets me upset for a minute, but it keeps me on my toes because when I go out in public, when I'm out with people, with my people, I'm like, look, keep your eyes open. Because there are some crazy, like today on the second part of Washington Journal, there was a question: Is Donald Trump making America great again? They only gave it 20 some minutes. It was so rich. I'm telling you, man, there are so many delusional and insane people in this country. Now, granted, that's a small sample size. These are mostly probably, you know, retired people. Some people on disability, but they appear to be voters, most of them. And once in a while, you know, you get people who, people who have a nice cogent argument either way. But I have to say this about Washington Journal. I'm really sad that they have not had a social scientist on to explain why Trump supporters feel like Trump is being beaten up on. And this is what Mulvaney was feeding into, if you listen to him. He did it twice. And, you know, and this is what Conway was touching on. See, this administration, including the president, they continuously engage in what will be called antisocial behaviors. You know, it's just negative behaviors, verbally, physically, whatever. So if you're covering straight news, the news is going to be negative about the president. Because he acts in a negative fashion. And he engages in negative behavior. I mean, you can't turn a posy, a flower, into a pile of shit and just say, look, it's a flower. And you're like, no, it's a steaming pile of shit. No, it's a flower, because I said so. You know, it doesn't work like that. So just because it doesn't make them feel good, you know, and this goes back into that living vicariously through them. So when he gets hurt, they feel it. They totally identify with this individual.
Oh, they had a hissy today because one of the things that he was rage tweeting about over the course of the weekend was that, you know, Judge Jeanine Pirro's not on. Put her back on now. And instead today, Fox News TV Radio Rwanda announced that they had hired Donna Brazile as one of their paid commentators. And the maggots lost their shit.
Look how base that looks. Let's go get this liberal black woman, man, you know, because we had the white woman was talking about Muslims. Let's go get the liberal black woman. That's what that looks like.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, I'm still frightened. And see, that's what we have. The way you presented your argument was very calm, you know, almost devoid of emotion. Not really. But, you know, if you really, it's frightening if you really think about it. He's been given. We know he's been giving up secrets. They had to reclassify things because he gave up secrets. In the White House, no American press, just Russian folks in there doing who knows what. You know, it's so much. So this person, and see, this is I said it before, but I think it's important. What is going to happen when there already are, there's things going on we don't even know about. But right. When there's a real crisis, right, and there's a directive, and it's like, sir, you can do this or this. And like you said, he's already been, he did the Moab just because he wanted to blow something up, like an eight-year-old, you know, like, we're going south and we're going to get fireworks, you know, because you can't really have real fireworks in the north. We have dynamite down here. You can buy, you don't even want to know. It's crazy. So he's playing with firecrackers, you know, he's playing with fire bombs like they're firecrackers, and he has to be told, no, you can't use a nuclear bomb. He's like, not even a tactical one? No, you can't.
Just a little one.
That's what we're dealing with. And now he's more ill now than he was then. He's under pressure.
And by the way, Scott just responded, some Washington Journal callers, ... cranky, delusional shut-ins saying stupid shit. In other words, yeah. Trump voters.
Americans. You know, if you listen to these, it's frightening. It's really frightening. And to have the folks who make a lot of money being shills for him at the expense of this country. See, and the Electoral College let us down. They had to know that something was wrong with him. You know, he hasn't been right for a long time. And he's been evil and racist forever. That's nothing new. But as most of us know, when dementia and Alzheimer's kicks in, many times it will magnify the worst parts of some people's personality. And some people who are always nice, you know, they turn. You've seen that, right?
Yeah.
So, I'm frightened, and you didn't help. Yeah, I know you got to go.
Well, I didn't mean to not help. I was just trying to put, because I assume that everybody knew about the rage tweeting this weekend, and it was so all over the place. It was utterly, completely, totally bizarre. But we're past being able to say, well, wasn't that interesting? We should, in a functioning republic driven by a written constitution, be asking, okay, he's gone, he's nuts, what do we do about it? Let's consult the Constitution.
What can you do to magnify that message? Because you parsed it out.
And you know, I guess I'm being a little bit inconsistent, Todd, because I'm also the one who said, listen, we go down the impeachment path, it could blow up in the Democrats' faces. Because, you know, the Republicans always say, oh, we better not do that. You know, the Republicans paid a price for impeaching Bill Clinton. Horseshit they did. I didn't see the Democrats taking Congress in 2000. No.
No.
But the thing is, you can do it if you're a Republican over a blowjob, but over a president who is his own one-man walking, racketeering, influenced, corrupt organization. Oh, no, we're stealing democracy. And don't think for a damn minute, Todd, that the for-profit media that thrives on nothing but ginned-up controversy and fake horse race numbers. Okay, I shouldn't use fake. Ginned up controversy and horse race numbers, it'd be nothing but, well, you know, we took another poll and 52% of people who live in states that begin with N disagree. Oh, but there's 48% of people who, there's 52% of people who live in states that begin with M that agree. Goodness me, the name.
I'm much more. I actually think there's a better chance of removing him from office based on an inability to fulfill the duties of the office than there is of removing him via impeachment.
I think I agree, and you, this is why I'm saying you made such a wonderful argument, because it's important for the vice president to have cover to say, look, I had no choice. I was presented with the evidence. It's not your fault. It's not my fault. This we have to go by the Constitution. I know this is our president, but we have to make sure that he gets the help he needs. So it's going to have to be something, some type of speech like that. Because these people are identifying with him. He, you know, this is like Christ to them. You know, body and spirit. That's our president. Because it's like all those things you presented. You present facts. They said, well, you know, you present the facts. Okay, well, if we had impeachment about lying about sex versus subverting the country, let's see, lying about sex, subverting the country. Do you think these are equal? And then they'll say, well, they both lied. Okay. But do you understand the magnitude?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know, it's hard. This is just craziness, man. We have to stop this nonsense. We have to stop it. It's not like we want Pence. Pence is in trouble. This whole thing is messed up. I don't even know. Pence has to be in trouble. He was in all those meetings. Either he told
Paul Manafort chose Mike Pence. Sorry, sound like a broken record, but.
No, and his son, and you know, you went, a while ago you asked me, well, why hasn't, because the evidence is out there, why hasn't Donald Trump Jr. been indicted yet? I'm wondering if they're just going to present so much evidence to the president privately where either the son is going to tell on him or he's going to tell on the son. I guess the son has to, I guess the president has to tell on the son and pardon him. That doesn't look good,
does it? No. Well, we'll see what tomorrow brings.
Tweet on.
Yeah. Later, Todd. Have a good one, man.
I'll see you. Thanks, Bob.
Bye.
Take care.
It's our buddy Todd calling from South Carolina, Stan. Good conversations tonight. And we still managed to deal with some morons. And tomorrow being Trump-tanic Tuesday, well, there will be plenty more where that came from. Again, thanks to Texas T and Alma for jumping in on the fundraising. That'll leave us with 460 to go, which means 660 tomorrow evening. And maybe we'll knock some of that out. It'll be great. Thanks to all of you who keep the program going. Thanks to all of our subscribers. Thank you to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks earlier in the evening to Steve from Georgia, Stan, and Sparky. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you to Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thanks to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 years struggling for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.